In the name of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, it's good to be here after being gone for a week. I got home Monday. Appreciate the interest in your prayers in the week I was gone. Appreciate that very much. I arrived home Monday evening with zero voice. It's been improving. I wasn't quite sure if I could handle this morning or not, but if you can put up with it, I think maybe we'll be able to see our way clear. One comment made at home, just a little wistfully, that maybe I wouldn't be able to handle the whole time here. Get out a little bit early, but we'll see. All right. Appreciated the thoughts that were given this morning, two devotionals and the Sunday school songs that we sang. That it's been a good time of being together. I appreciated very much what was shared on Wednesday evening, and for those of you who were not here, there was some information shared and some discussion on how to meet our medical needs as a brotherhood. And I got the impression from what our deacons shared that they would believe that these needs could be met as a brotherhood if we put ourselves to it, if we have enough enough contribution that direction. So this has been going through my mind the last few days, and I thought maybe it's time to have another message. It's been a few years since I've preached a message on the matter of giving. And so I looked into this a little bit, both some things I'd shared earlier and some other things that's come to me. And I'd like to speak this morning on the subject of the grace of giving. Now, Brother Gerald talked about grace. I looked in my dictionary this morning. What does grace mean? And, well, there's a number of different definitions, but the second one in my dictionary says a virtue coming from God. And so I guess that's the definition I'd like to use here this morning. The virtue coming from God of giving. Turn with me, if you will, to Acts 20. We'd like to pick up a phrase out of this passage for the basis of our message this morning. And this phrase is this: it is more blessed to give than receive. And according to Paul, these were the words of Jesus. I don't think we have those exact words recorded in the Gospels as such, but I have no doubt that what Jesus would have said this at some time or another, and his teaching would very much reflect that. I'm going to read verses 32 to 35. And this is rather interesting with the thought of giving. The Apostle Paul was one who had given himself. He had given himself for the people at Ephesus, the ones he was talking to there. And I believe that his giving was not just silver and gold. I believe it was he gave his heart to the people. He gave his time. He gave his energies. And he tells them now, he says, I'm going to be going on, and I will not see your face anymore. And he said, you know how I have come among you and how I've been with you, how I've taught you from house to house. But I know that after my departing, there's going to be those that are going to come in with false doctrine. He says, they're going to be grievous wolves that are going to come in. They're not going to spare the flock. And he says, take heed, therefore, to yourself. He's speaking to the ministers, to the elders of the Ephesian church. He says, take heed to yourself and to the flock. All right, when he gets done with this discourse, then he says this, verses 32 to 35. And now, brethren, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and to give you an inheritance among all them which are sanctified. I have coveted no man's silver or gold or apparel. Yea, ye yourselves know that these hands have ministered unto my necessities and to them that were with me. I have showed you all things, how that so laboring, ye ought to support the weak, and remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And so Paul is just saying, he says, I'm turning you over to the Lord. And the Lord has his ways, the Lord has his methods of meeting your need. But I would like to remind you, as I was in your midst, those however many years it was it 3 years or whatever, I didn't have any desire to take from you material things. Your silver and your gold. I didn't covet that or what you were wearing. And you know that I met my own needs as much as I could by working with my own hands. That's a principle. And not only that, I didn't bring an entourage of people along with me that you needed to see to it that their needs were met. He says, I worked with my hands to take care of my necessities and to those who were with me. And I have showed you by example that by laboring, by working, you could support those who are in need. Says the weak here. And then to remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said it is more blessed to give than to receive. And I'm sure we have all found that to be true, but you know there would be those, and I think maybe this would have come out a little bit in some of the things that were said Wednesday evening, or maybe those who look at the church as a cow to milk that never runs dry. And that's not what Paul was advocating. He says, I didn't look to you for my sustenance. I worked for myself. I showed you how that you ought to labor so that you would have to give and not just to be on the receiving end. All right. Now, as I'm going to call ourselves creatures. I hope you're not offended. But you know, we are by nature selfish creatures. A child isn't very old until he claims that the things that he has are mine. One of the first words a child will learn is mine. Well, that usually is accompanied by some actions, some ways of letting somebody know. And so we say, mine, and hold on to it in turn. The thought is, you can't have it. And you're not going to get it. And if somebody does snatch that which they claim to be theirs, there's a great wail, a great noise that is made. Well, you know, as adults, we don't use those methods. But I'll have to admit, you know, there's been times where I have put something out of sight for fear I might have to share it or give it to somebody else. So I get it out of the way so nobody sees it. Another thing I have thought about, and I don't think I'm guilty of this. I really don't think I am, but I know that there's some people that are, and I don't know if anybody here is or not. But thinking of trying to get with and get the best or the advantage of someone else, you know, sometimes as a promotion, a store will advertise something at a ridiculously low price. Steeply discounted. And so then there's a rush to get that thing. There's just a few people that's going to get that. And so there's no politeness, there's no consideration, but there's a me first mentality. What am I saying? I'm just saying that that's human nature. All right. So giving, Jesus said, is blessed. And giving is a wonderful thing. And you know, to have the wherewithal to give is a blessing. And there is something about giving that neutralizes our selfish nature. And so God has seen fit. He says it is for your health, it is for your spiritual good, to give you the grace, a virtue coming from God, to give you the grace of giving. Now, God himself has a heart that overflows with generosity, and his nature is to give. And he gives many blessings to his people. In 1 Timothy 6:17, it says that he giveth us richly all things to enjoy. It seems that he delights to give from his rich storehouse of blessings. And there's many principles. We want to look at some of these from the Old Testament and the New Testament that show that he gives to his people so that in turn his people can give to others. And so God does not necessarily, bless us and give to us just for our own benefit, but that we could be channels through whom he can bless others. And so throughout time, God has seen fit to help needy people through acts of kindness and charity of his children, of his people. And you know, there always have been and there always will be those who need assistance. Jesus said, "The poor ye have with you always." Now, one thing I thought about here, as far as the day in which we live, maybe in comparison to some of the way our forefathers lived, or even at the time of Jesus. The churches of the 21st century are faced with some things that are different than our forebears faced. We do live in a land of plenty, materially speaking. And in many ways, our lives are not as difficult, but they're more complicated. Let me explain a little bit. We have many conveniences that make life easier. This morning I didn't have to go out to the barn and hitch up a horse to come to church. All I had to do was go to the car and get in, turn the key, put the seatbelt on, and away we go. Last night, when I wanted to read, I didn't have to light a lantern to be able to read. But on the other hand, my great-grandfather never got held up because the car wouldn't run. Had to figure out what was wrong with it, get a mechanic around. He never had to figure out how to stay warm and get water when the electricity went off, if you see what I'm saying. And so there are changes. And I believe that we appreciate and we're grateful for things that have made our living more easy, more comfortable, more, not as harsh. And so we live in an economy today, whether you have much money or not, or whether you're poor, or whether you're rich, that's not what we're saying, but we live in a day of unprecedented affluence. And we had no choice in that matter. I had no choice. You had no choice. It's a time in which we live. And so we need to try to endeavor to choose what God's way is in the days in which we live. And I think some of this would have come out Wednesday night in relation to the medical. We're living in a day of such tremendous medical charges, such high charges and so on. All right. So the times in which we live are a mix of blessings and concerns. God, who gives us all good gifts, has graciously given us adequate food, clothing, shelter. He has blessed us materially above that which is needed to sustain life. I think we could probably all say that there's not a one of us who are suffering from malnourishment, suffering from exposure to the elements because we don't have enough clothes, we don't have a shelter. And so he has blessed us materially. Now, along with that, often, usually, that there's time and money that are left over after meeting our basic needs. And this is where we can face spiritual danger, some things that we need to consider. You know, there are things that are encroaching upon the lifestyle, the Mennonite lifestyle, you might say, that maybe weren't issues in years past, and maybe militate and do militate against our stand in relation to mixing with worldly entertainment, crowds and worldly entertainment. You know, some of the concerns we've had to address in the last decade, you know, whether it be maybe skiing or golfing or some of those things, that would have been not an issue in years past. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, and I know I'm going to sound like an old codger here, but I've just thought about this different times. I've mentioned this on occasion to a few people that complain about how hard they have to work. When I was first married, over 40 years ago, I worked 11 hours a day, 6 days a week. And so in the wintertime, the only time I saw where I lived was in the daylight, was on Sunday. And you know, barely made ends meet. Hardly had enough to pay all the bills. And you know, it was a great leap forward when we actually got to the point we could take off a half a day Saturday. All right, that's some of my background. I've had to wonder, and maybe you would disagree with me, but you know, frankly, spiritually speaking, probably we'd be better off if we lived in an economy where we had to work from dawn to dusk to simply sustain life. It wouldn't give so much time for all this other stuff. But that's not the case. And probably no one wants to revert to that kind of economy. If I would ask some of you young brethren if you'd be willing to come work for me 6 days a week, 11 hours a day, I don't think you'd even talk to me. All right. As I think of this matter of giving, there's two Bible principles that I think three, but two before we get to the third one, that we need to look at. The first, and this is commanded, is to work, to be industrious, to gain. That's principle number one. The second principle is thrift and economy and being careful with the things that God has given to us. These two principles, Bible principles, of industriousness and thrift, tend toward wealth and accumulation. Now, what are you going to do with it? We need to work. We need to be careful, not waste. So then what are you going to do with what you have carefully been a careful steward of? That's where the grace of giving comes into play. And so God has given us that third principle of giving so that it cuts right to the heart of covetousness. It helps us to remember that He has a right to everything that He has given to us, and so on. Okay, I'm going to just go through these three principles very rapidly here. First, the matter of being industrious. God doesn't expect us to just sit around, and He'll spoon-feed us all of our lives. He's given us the wherewithal to sustain life, and we need to each put forth effort to sustain life. And so the Scriptures teach us to work, to be productive, to contribute, and to gain. From the beginning of time, God did not have in mind that man should just sit around on an easy chair. When God created the Garden of Eden, there was everything there that Adam and Eve could have possibly wished for. They didn't need anything else. And you know, it seems to me they could have just If they could have made a hammock and strung it from one tree to another and just lounged around all day, what better could have they done? But no, God put man into the garden to dress and to keep it. After the fall, he said, he told Adam, he said, "By the sweat of thy face shalt thou earn thy bread." Just a side question. Sometimes we kind of get some. As I was looking at this yesterday, I was wondering, and I have no answer to this, but is sweat a result of the fall? Or did he sweat when he kept the garden before that? I don't know. Isn't important. All right, there's a number of principles in the Old Testament that help us to understand and the matter of industriousness and also how it's carried over into the New. I'm going to read several verses here. First of all, I'm going to start with Leviticus 23, verse 2, or verse 3, rather, 23, verse 3, that says that in 6 days should all thy work be done. Leviticus 23, verse 3, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of rest and holy convocation. Ye shall do no work therein. It is a Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. And so the principle that God laid out in the Old Testament is that there are 6 days to work and one day, a day of rest, a Sabbath day. Kind of along with that, I don't read anywhere in the Old Testament where it was issue or a concern or that what the Old Testament saints did to fill up their time on the weekend. They were to work 6 days and rest seven. Pretty simple. All right, I'm going to read several verses from the book of Proverbs that shows to us that the living was to be gained by work and by labor. First of all, in Proverbs 14, verse 23 says, "In all labor there is profit, but the talk of the lips tendeth to penury." And so, it's saying here that there's profit when there is work that's done, but if all we're going to do is just talk about what we're going to do, just sit around and visit, that tends to penury or to be that would be poverty. Proverbs 13, verse 11 says, "Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase." Now, wealth gotten by vanity, some other translations would say dishonesty or fraud or schemes. If we're going to try to get wealth by scheming or by being dishonest, taking advantage of someone else, that's not true wealth there. 13, how does that say that? Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished. It will not hold. It will soon be gone. But he that gathereth by labor shall increase. That's a principle that God has laid out that we our goods increase by work. Proverbs 12:11 says, "He that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread." Ecclesiastes 9:10 says, "Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might." And then laziness and slothfulness is spoken against in Proverbs 10:5. "He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame." I had to think about that verse a little bit this morning. What kind of a young man or older man would it be if we got into harvest here? And from early morning till late night, the equipment was going, the windrowers are going, the combines, the balers, the stackers, the trucks. You know what it's like here in the Willamette Valley at harvest time. And I just sit back and look out the window, sit in the breeze somewhere and let the world go by. I don't think that's what God intends. He that gathereth during harvest time is wise, but he that sleepeth is a shame. All right. Going to the New Testament, maybe I'll read a couple verses here yet. In 1 Corinthians 4:12, and I'm doing this to show that it's not just an Old Testament principle. 1 Corinthians 4:12, and labor, working with, well, he's talking here about the apostles, things that they did, that they were hungry and they were thirsty and they were naked and they had no certain dwelling place, and labor, working with our own hands. That was what the Apostle Paul said they did. Also in 1 Thessalonians 4:11-12. And that ye study to be quiet, and to do your own business, and to work with your own hands as we commanded you, that ye may walk honestly toward them that are without, that ye have lack of nothing. And so he says that if you do your own business, if you work with your own hands, I've commanded you that, he says, then you can be honest toward those who are not a part of the church, and you have lack of nothing. All right. Well, there's other things that could be mentioned. Ephesians 4:28 says that him that stole, let him steal no more, but rather let him work with his hands that he may have to give to him that needeth. And so this matter of industry or work, as a person works diligently and handles the increase wisely, there is a potential. Not always, but there's a potential of accumulation. All right. Now let's think about thrift a little bit. God expects us not to waste that which he has given to us. You know, we are consumers. We eat food. We wear clothes. There's different things that we need for the sustenance of the body. And God expects us to use those things. But to be wasteful is not godlike. And one way we can verify that is when Jesus increased the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes after they were done eating, why, there was food left over. And he told his disciples, go out and pick it up, that there be no food left over, or that it not waste, rather, and that nothing be lost. Now, Jesus could have made more. The next day, they wouldn't have had to have those baskets of bread to eat. They could have eaten what Jesus would provide. I remember being a boy at home. My father would get quite perturbed if he found a half-eaten apple somewhere out in the yard or something. And he said that that's wasteful to eat a half an apple and just throw the other away. I never quite connected with that completely, because I could go out to the apple tree and there'd be almost bushels of them rotting under the tree. But the principle was right. We should not just take something, eat a little bit, and throw the rest away. You know, we live in a throwaway society. And maybe we get more and more that way as things become more expensive, and it costs more to fix something than it does to buy a new one. I guess I won't go into all the economies of that. But we do need to be frugal. And if we were more frugal and did not spend as much on ourselves, then we could give more to the needs of others. I believe that's true. The book of Proverbs, and I guess I better be careful where I tread here, because I know some of you are hunters. But the book of Proverbs talks about a lazy man, a slothful man, who doesn't eat what he takes in hunting, wastes it. But a diligent man considers that the goods entrusted to him are precious. I'm going to read another verse yet in Proverbs that has to do with being thrifty. Proverbs 21:20. Proverbs 21:20 says, "There is a treasure to be desired, and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up." I think what this is saying is that a wise man, there will be provision. It says there will be a treasure, there's oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man just uses it. You know, it's lives from hand to mouth, basically. And so I think there would be an indication here that we do need to save and have some things for provision. All right. Now, so let's look at this a little bit again. A combination of hard work and carefulness in consuming that which God gives to us, both scriptural principles, but in combination, they tend toward accumulation of goods. And so if we're not careful, the heart becomes covetous and wants more and more and wants to say, mine, and you can't have it, and you go find your own, and those things. All right, so now let's talk just a little bit here about giving. Giving cuts right to the heart of covetousness. So that we don't become selfish and hoard what God has given to us, and so that we don't become overly rich, God has given to His children the grace of giving. Now, giving is not just haphazard. Giving has some great responsibility. God is not interested in us just throwing our goods to the four winds and hope that some good comes of it. And neither should we, and this is something that sometimes is so hard to know what to do. I don't think that we should necessarily give to the lazy, because it helps them to become more lazy, and it helps them to actually live a life that is contrary to the principles of God's Word. So how much should we give to the lazy? You know, sometimes to give to another, depending on what it is, just helps that person on his spiral of financial disaster. But there are many true needs that need to be met. And I'm impressed with the number of references to giving that the Bible gives. And we can't nearly cover all of them here this morning. Proverbs 3:9 says, "Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase." And so we need to give to the Lord from the first that He has given to us and from the increase He's given to us. Now, you honor the Lord, but where do you give that? Well, maybe we'll touch on that in a minute or two here. In 1 Chronicles 29:9, when they when there was a message went out that they need materials to build the temple. I think it was David actually that would have. No, this is a different setting than what I was thinking. This here is the time of Hezekiah. Oh, no wonder. I'm in 2 Chronicles instead of 1 Chronicles. Okay, let's try this again. 1 Chronicles 29:9 says, "Then the people rejoiced for that they offered willingly, because with perfect heart they offered willingly to the Lord. And David the king also rejoiced with great joy." And so there was offerings that were brought. And the people rejoiced because they were able to do this, and they did it with a perfect heart, and they did it willingly. So we want to give to God. How do I give to God? You know, I suppose if Jesus would stand here personally, in person, we would be more than happy to bring an offering to Him to use as He sees best. Well, Jesus said, you can give to Him, but it's going to be through the person of someone else. In Matthew 25, verses 34 to 40. "Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered and you gave me meat. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. Naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. And I was in prison and you came unto me. All right. I think the righteous there felt like they'd have been glad to have helped Jesus if they saw him hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison. But when was that? Where was that? Verse 37. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee and hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. And so, is it fair to say this morning that if we help one another with our medical needs, we are meeting the need of Jesus? Or we're doing it for Jesus. Romans 12:13 says, distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality. 1 John 3, verse 17 says, But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? It's a question that isn't really an answer, isn't given, but it has an obvious answer. Well, we could look at in 1 Timothy 5, where widows are to be taken care of, and the New Testament church took offerings for those experiencing drought and famine. Maybe just several New Testament principles. First of all, I believe that we need to give willingly, not grudgingly, not of necessity. 2 Corinthians 8, verse 12 says, For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to the man hath, and not according to that he hath not. Now that's another principle. According to what we have. So God does not expect me to give something I don't have. So you shouldn't feel obligated to give something that you don't have. But then you might ask the question, well, why don't I have the wherewithal? But he says, according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. Acts 11:29 would have somewhat the same thought. Acts 11:29 says, Then the disciples, every man according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea. All right. One verse that interested me here quite a bit was in Romans 12. Romans 12, verse 8. It says, Or he that exhorteth on exhortation, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity. He that ruleth with diligence, he that showeth mercy with cheerfulness, and so on. Now, what is meant by giving with simplicity? I wasn't quite sure on that. But you look at that word and look it up in Strong's or Vines or one of them, and it has a thought. Simplicity means liberally, liberality, not self-seeking, generous. And so we could read it like this. He that giveth, let him do it in liberality. Give plenty. 1 Corinthians 16, verse 2. This is kind of interesting, as kind of not just the altogether how much and so on, but when. Upon the first day of the week, let every man of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no gathering when I come. So Paul was admonishing them, I guess, to take up an offering Sunday morning, which we normally do here. One more, 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7, says that as a man purposes in his heart, every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give. not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And so I believe that it's interesting how God will lay upon your heart or my heart a need. And a need that He lays upon my heart, He's not necessarily going to lay upon your heart. But we need to purpose to give according to that which the Spirit lays upon us. Well, you know, maybe there's some that would say, well, this message doesn't apply to me. I've never made enough money to have any to spare, and I'm always behind in my payments, and you're talking beyond me. Well, you know, the grace of giving is not about volumes of money. That's not what it's about. It's about an attitude of caring for those who are less fortunate. It's a willingness to share, and that might be time. It might be friendship. It might be spiritual help, not necessarily money. I was impressed in looking at where Jesus said in Matthew 10:8, "Freely ye have received, freely give." What was the setting? The setting was when He sent out the 12 to preach the good news to the various cities in Judea there. He told them specifically, don't take any silver or gold along. Don't take any money. And find a house, somebody to stay with, and I guess eat from their table or whatever. And yet He says, freely you've received and freely give. So He wasn't talking about money. It was He was talking about spiritual truths. All right, just a few thoughts here in closing then. I taught the subject of stewardship a number of times in Bible school, years past. And there I would try to encourage the students to give regularly and proportionately. In other words, there should be a plan. And that there be a specified portion that goes to God. And I've tried to teach my children, as I can, that they should at least tithe. Give a tithe of what they make. But you know, the unspoken connotation to that is, if you give to God 10%, then the rest is mine to do what I want to with. Well, not really. A pitfall of giving regularly, as I would also encourage, is that we can feel we've done our duty now. So a need comes up, and, well, I've already done my duty. And as I mentioned, I think there's times that that God impresses upon us a specific need. I'm going to give you just a little account here yet. Something that has just stuck with me over the years. Brother Marvin Trock, many years ago, in some open discussion or something, he said, there's times where I feel that there's a need that's come up that I should give toward. And for whatever reason, he doesn't feel like he had it or whatever, and then he said, almost invariably, something will come up. Somebody will get sick, there's a doctor bill, there's something that takes that amount from him anyhow. He'd just as well give it to the Lord in the first place. And I appreciate it. I thought about that many times. All right, one more verse in closing. In Ecclesiastes 5:13, it says, "There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely, riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt." And so I believe that true biblical giving solves a lot of problems. It solves the problem of covetousness. It helps to spread the gospel throughout the world. It helps us to meet needs within the brotherhood. And certainly it is a blessing as we can share together. Let's have a closing number and song.